welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. LinuxQuestions.org has reached another milestone, 2,500,000. That's how many posts we have at LQ now. Rounding out the stats for those interested, we also just hit 500,000 threads and have well over 275,000 registered members. I'd like to thank each and every member for making LQ what it is. Without the members, really, LQ would be nothing. And the phenomenal mod team has also really just been a huge and integral part of our success. I look forward to the next 2.5 million and remain dedicated to ensuring that LQ is a friendly and active atmosphere for discussing all things Linux and open source related. As always, if you have any feedback for us about the site or pretty much about anything that we do, don't hesitate to let us know. While on the topic of 2.5 million, LQISO is just shy, and by the time you listen to this, may have already hit, having facilitated that many downloads. And while LQISO has the latest and most popular downloads, such as Ubuntu 6.10 that just came out and Fedora Core 6 that just came out, it also has a wide variety of lesser-known distributions that you may be interested in trying out. With almost 400 distribution versions available from nearly 700 mirrors, iso.linuxquestions.org is the place to download Linux ISOs. And a last note, remember that the new LQ sitemap will allow you to explore Linux questions and may even lead you to parts of the site that you didn't even know existed. As we've grown over the last 6 years, there's a considerable amount of new sections and even new sites that I think many of the core membership just simply don't know about. So visit www.linuxquestions.org/linux/sitemap.html to learn more about the site itself. Now, on to the news. The first story I have is Sun open sources Java under the GPL. So it's official, and the rumors were indeed true. Sun has released Java under the GPL. From the press release, quote, Santa Clara-based Sun said it's making nearly all of its Java source code, excluding small pockets of code that aren't owned by Sun, available under the general public license. The same license also covers the distribution of the core or kernel of the popular open-source operating system Linux, which competes against Microsoft's Windows operating system. All the Java source code is expected to be released by March 2007, Green said. The move covers all Java technology, which includes software that runs on handheld devices, personal computers, and servers. End quote. As I've mentioned on the previous podcast, I guessed that this would be released under the CDDL, and I think many others guessed the same thing. Sun is sending a huge message here, I think, by using the GPL. They have been, of course, supporters of open source for a long time now, but their occasional waffling on the issue really tarnished their rep in the open source community. I hope this move serves to get them really the recognition at this point they deserve. Of course, I hope it also helps them prosper, which will further serve to solidify open source in the enterprise and commercial worlds. So you may be interested in what this release actually covers. It is a stock GPL2 for J2SE, J2ME, which is the mobile component, and J2EE. It then is the GPL2 plus the class path exception for the SE libraries. Basically, this means you are still 100% free to write closed source commercial applications that run in the JVM without in any way having any impact on what license you choose. That brings us to really what are the repercussions of this. First, being able to yum install Java or apt-get install Java, depending on what distribution you use, is going to be really, really nice and of course really convenient. That's just a small bit to this though. I'd guess Sun will dual license the code for those who are interested, so I'd not expect their direct bottom line to change immediately. They still should be able to generate some revenue from this. That being said, I'd expect uptake of Java to increase substantially. It already powers a huge array of devices, but I'd expect that to increase even more. In the end, that's good for Sun, potentially very good for Sun. I'd also expect the number of open source projects that use Java to skyrocket. Sun will get the bits of innovation back for their use. Developers' concerns over the license is gone, of course, now, and the JCP, of course, is still going to control the direction of Java. And a couple of open source projects that I think obviously will benefit here are OpenOffice, which 002, they had been using some Java and took a little bit of heat for it, so I think this will let them integrate Java into that platform, which should be a substantial gain for the community at large. Now, it's important to remember that in the end, Sun still gets to decide what quote-unquote Java is. And you can fork it, of course, without issue under the GPL, but you can't call that fork Java. To be Java, you're still going to have to pass the test suite that Sun does, and it's a pretty rigorous test suite. Moving on to the longer term is a little bit tougher as far as what the repercussions of this are, but I'm extremely interested in watching this one progress. And one thing that I think should be fun to watch is what the impact on this is for the uptake of .NET. I also find it intriguing to see Jonathan Schwartz admit that the recent Microsoft Novell deal did impact this decision. And here's a quote from Jonathan. Quote, "And in closing, I want to put one nagging item to rest. By admitting that one of the strongest motivations to select the GPL was the announcement made last week by Novell and Microsoft, suggesting that free and open source software wasn't safe unless a royalty was being paid. As an executive from one of those companies said, free has to have a price. That's nonsense. Free software can be free of royalties and free of impediments to broad-scale global adoption and deployment. Witness what we've done with Solaris and now what we've done with Java. Developers are free to pick up the code and create derivatives without royalty or obligation. Those that say open source software can't be safe for customers or that commercially indemnified software can't foster community are merely advancing their own agenda without any basis in fact. They're also fighting a rising tide." End quote. Now to me, I think that pretty clearly means that the CDDL may very well have been the leading candidate before the Microsoft Novell deal. So for those of you that didn't like that deal, it could be a little bit of a silver lining here that out of that came GPL Java. It also to me means, though, that we may have a new Sun on our hands, one that has been forming for a while now, but has finally got the conviction it might need to compete successfully. The next story I have is related to this, and that's IBM Cool to Sun's open source Java plan. In what I think is a bit of irony, it looks like IBM, who has just been trying to get Sun to open source Java for years, isn't actually that happy with the GPL decision. From the article, quote, "After years of internal debates and public calls from IBM to make Java open source, you'd think IBM would be overjoyed at the news. Not so. IBM on Monday issued a statement attributed to Rod Smith, Vice President of Emerging Internet Technologies in the IBM Software Group, who penned the open letter in 2004 requesting Sun to make Java open source. Smith said that IBM supports all open source licenses approved by the Open Source Initiative, which is the OSI, but he noted that there are already two projects around open source Java. There's Harmony, a project in the incubator phase at Apache to build an open source edition of Java SE, and IBM joined the Harmony project shortly after it was launched in 2005. Meanwhile, Motorola 2 weeks ago said it will contribute code to start a Java ME project also at Apache. In light of the Apache projects, we have discussed with Sun our strong belief that Sun should contribute their Java technologies to Apache rather than starting another open source Java project, or at least make their contributions available under an Apache-friendly license to ensure the open source Java community isn't fragmented and disenfranchised. Instead, Sun would bring the same benefits of open source Java to the significant and growing open source community, the statement said. End quote. So it just goes to show you that you really can't make everyone happy. Overall, the open source community seems quite happy with the GPL decision, though. And I haven't had a chance, or the time really, to look deeply into how the Java community has reacted, but that is something I plan to do, and I'll report on that in the future podcast. I'd guess that despite this initial reaction, IBM will likely become more involved in this as time goes on. As for Project Harmony, they said that they remain committed to reaching their stated goals. The next story I have is the Samba team disapproves strongly of the Samba team asks Novell to reconsider. And this is more on a story that I have been closely watching and reporting on in the podcast. It looks like the Samba team has officially requested that Novell reconsider the recent patent agreement they made with Microsoft. This is from the Samba site. Quote, "The Samba team disapproves strongly of the actions taken by Novell on November 2nd. One of the fundamental differences between the proprietary software world and the free software world is that the proprietary software world divides users by forcing them to agree to coercive licensing agreements which restrict their rights to share with each other, whereas the free software world encourages users to unite and share the benefits of the software. The patent agreement struck between Novell and Microsoft is a divisive agreement. It deals with users and creators of free software differently depending on their commercial versus non-commercial status, and deals with them differently depending on whether they obtain their free software directly from Novell or from somebody else. The goals of the free software community and the GNU GPL allow for no such distinctions. Furthermore, the GPL makes it clear that all distributors of GPL software must stand together in the fight against software patents. Only by standing together do we stand a chance of defending against the peril represented by software patents. With the agreement, Novell is attempting to destroy that unified defense, exchanging the long-term interests of the entire free software community for a short-term advantage for Novell over their competitors. For Novell to make this deal shows a profound disregard for the relationship they have with the free software community. We are, in essence, their suppliers, and Novell should know that they have no right to make self-serving deals on behalf of others which run contrary to the goals and ideals of the free software community. Using patents as competitive tools in the free software world is not acceptable. Novell, as a participant in numerous debates, discussions, and conferences on the topic, knew this to be the case. We call upon Novell to work with the Software Freedom Law Center to undo the patent agreement and acknowledge its obligations as a beneficiary of the free software community. End quote. Now, in addition to the Sambo request, I've even seen multiple sites around the internet requesting a full boycott of all Novell products by the open source community. Now, I would say Novell had to see this, or at least some level of community dissent coming. The question to them likely had to be whether they'd lose enough business to prevent the deal from being profitable on a whole. Regardless of the legality of the patent deal, and I've still seen no official word from the Free Software Foundation on the Section 7 issue, but I do know that Eben Moglen has been granted confidential access to the legal terms of the agreement in order to scrutinize it, so we should get more official word on that soon. Novell here, though, has clearly gone against the sentiment of the community and really the spirit of the GPL. What long-term implications that's going to have for them remains to be seen. One shouldn't forget, though, that Novell really isn't an open-source company, at least in the same way as a company like Red Hat is. Novell still has a lot of proprietary software, sure, but the issue goes much deeper than that. They have a long history as a closed-source company, and a lot of long-time employees who aren't necessarily open-source people. In the end, it comes down to being a systemic cultural thing. While they have many people who really, really get it, and a ton of open-source talent, that's not necessarily the case for the average Novell employee. Now, couple that with the fact that Novell has a long history with Microsoft, and I don't really find this deal that surprising, or at least as surprising as some others. Does that mean I think that Novell is going to back out of the deal at this point? It's probably unlikely, but it will be interesting to see their response if Eben decides that they have violated the GPL. And like I said, we should know on that soon. And when we find out, I'll make sure to update you in the podcast. The next story I have is Sugar CRM open source? And this is an interesting question that I really haven't seen a lot of talk about. Sugar CRM, the quote-unquote commercial open source company, now uses a license that is not OSI approved. Basically, what they've done is taken the MPL, which is the Mozilla public license, and added this additional restriction, and this is from the Sugar CRM site. Quote, additional terms applicable to the Sugar CRM public license. Effect, these additional terms described in the Sugar CRM public license, additional terms shall apply to the covered code under this license. Sugar CRM and logo. This license does not grant any rights to use the trademark Sugar CRM and the Sugar CRM logos, even if such marks are included in the original code or modifications. However, in addition to the other notice obligations, all copies of the covered code in executable and source code form distributed must, as a form of attribution of the original author, include on each user interface screen the Powered by Sugar CRM logo and the copyright notice in the same form as the latest version of the cover code distributed by Sugar CRM at the time of distribution of such copy. In addition, the Powered by Sugar CRM logo must be visible to all users and be located at the very bottom center of each user interface screen. Notwithstanding the above, the dimensions of the Powered by Sugar CRM logo must be at least 106 by 23 pixels. When users click on the Powered by Sugar CRM logo, it must direct them back to http://www.sugarforge.org. In addition, the copyright notice must remain visible to all users at all times at the bottom of the user interface screen. When users click on the copyright notice, it must redirect them back to www.sugarcrm.com. End quote. Now, I'm not sure why they insist on keeping the Powered by Sugar CRM logo, especially with such specifics as it must be centered and certain size restrictions, and the mandatory link does seem to be a bit much, at least to me. The thing is, they make a killer product that really stands on its own by itself, so personally, I don't think they need to resort to things like this. That's not the question at hand, though. Since this is definitely an additional restriction, should they still be calling it open source? Additionally, will the OSI respond? It's a tough call, and it's one that I'm kind of still thinking about. I've not really formed a firm opinion on it yet, but I am interested on what listeners think. So if you have an opinion on this topic, please either send me an audio comment or post in the comment section for this week's podcast. The last story I have is Adobe releases the source for its ActionScript virtual machine to the Mozilla Foundation. And here's a quote from the Penguin.swf official Adobe blog. Quote, "Today, Adobe released the source for its ActionScript virtual machine to the Mozilla Foundation. That's what Adobe did. Since this blog is a common stop for open source minded folk, I thought it might be pertinent to use this space to discuss what Adobe didn't do. Adobe did not open source the Flash Player. Adobe did not incorporate the Flash Player into Mozilla. Adobe did not license Mozilla's HTML rendering engine. Adobe did not purchase Mozilla or vice versa." End quote. This new project is going to be called Temerian, in keeping with the current Mozilla naming scheme, and it's going to be hosted, of course, at Mozilla itself. From the Mozilla FAQ, quote, "The goal of the Temerian project is to implement a high-performance, open-source implementation of the ECMA script 4th edition language specification. The Temerian virtual machine will be used by Mozilla within SpiderMonkey, the core JavaScript engine embedded into Firefox, and other products based on Mozilla technology. The code will continue to be used by Adobe as part of the ActionScript virtual machine within Adobe Flash Player." End quote. So, what's this all mean and what are the repercussions? Basically, ActionScript is based on the ECMA script language specification, which is also the base of just plain JavaScript. With the release of Flash 9, and the beta of that, of course, is now available for Linux, Flash now uses ActionScript Virtual Machine to interpret ActionScript in a just-in-time manner. It's that bit of code that has been open-sourced and donated to Mozilla. The Temerian code will now be included with SpiderMonkey, which is the open-sourced C-based JavaScript engine currently used by Firefox. In the end, the benefits of this should be significant, although most likely quite a ways off. JavaScript itself should be much faster and, more importantly probably, memory efficient once this is integrated, which means Ajax applications will probably be able to do things that aren't currently viable right now. But additionally, since much of Firefox itself is written in Zool, which a key component of Zool is JavaScript, this could even mean that Firefox itself gets a performance boost. Now additionally, from a mindshare perspective, this is the largest code contribution that Mozilla has ever received, of course outside of the original donation of the whole code from Netscape. I think that goes a long way. Future versions of Temerian are going to be shared by both Flash and Firefox, with no fork planned between the two. With no real downside, this announcement should gain Adobe some points in the community, which at this point I think they need. People are pretty upset with Adobe in the open source community over the lack of Flash, and Flash not being open sourced is some people's gripe. No Flash at all being even released for Linux in quite some time is some other people's gripe, so this was some much needed support. I suspect, though, that this isn't the last time Adobe warms up to the open source community. From what I've seen recently, they have some pretty large aspirations, and open source could aid them in much of what I think they want to accomplish. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.